Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 515.LA0345, certificate number 26561. The Garbage Barge.
Dripping brown ooze of possibly infectious material.
The governor of Louisiana threatened to send out the National Guard if the barge tied up there.
The vagabond barge has become an international issue.
The most watched load of garbage in the memory of man.
Six ports have already refused the refuse.
The barge has been chased away by the warplanes of two nations, and now it's anchored here, 5 miles off the coast of Key West, Florida. Still loaded with tons of garbage, still unwanted.
I say garbage barge all the time.
Like, what's an example of how you would say that in context?
I will describe things that I think are garbage barges.
Like, instead of saying this is a total show, you would say,
yeah,
this is a total garbage
barge.
If I say
this is a hot mess or whatever, I would just say this is a garbage barge because it's so, like, internally, it's like a Chuck D rhyme.
It's a Gen X reference.
It's a Gen X reference, and also, you know, you run out of ways to say hot mess, and of course, garbage fire was a popular.
Oh yeah, remember the month when people would say, "It's a total Twitter's a garbage fire."
Garbage fire, right? Yeah. But garbage barge, there's like a level of indignity to it, a lonely, unwanted barge of garbage plying the seas.
Like a ghost ship, Flying Dutchman.
Yeah, it just...
It's a great story, and I think it might be kind of forgotten today. Is anyone who doesn't remember watching it live on the news have thoughts about the garbage barge? I think maybe no. I think it's a good omnibus topic for that reason.
Yeah, the pace of like global indignity is so heightened now. It's things are moving so fast. There are probably 40... garbage barges right now that various people on the internet are exercised about.
We have barge fatigue.
but you and I remember a time when a garbage barge was really a novelty.
Sure. Your whole family would go down to the wharf.
To watch it go by.
To take a look. Son, tell your grandkids that was the garbage barge.
There it was. You saw it with thine own eyes.
All right, now we'll go get you a peppermint stick. By the way, speaking of something you just mentioned, do you know what happens in a month and a half?
Halley's Comet returns.
That is correct. Halley's Comet does return.
Or Halley's Comet.
But also,
I was so chastised.
You're gonna get mail again. The first week of August, Chuck D turns 60.
Wow.
And I know we're speaking to an early September audience at the earliest.
So Chuck D is already 60 in a futurelings world.
I hope that Mr. Chuck has lived to see his 60th birthday. But can you imagine?
You can call him Mr. Chuck. I didn't realize that he was, you know, I knew he was older.
Yeah, because he was like 28 when Yo Bummer's the show came out.
Yeah.
And all those other guys were like 19.
Right. He was the college guy.
Yeah,
the,
he was some graphic design guy who'd been to
college DJ.
SUNY or wherever he went.
60 years old.
Isn't that crazy? We have to live in a world where Chuck D is 60.
I mean, I don't even think.
He should change his name to Chuck LX.
Woo! Oh, people love Roman numeral jokes.
I don't think they do.
I think 60 years old is older than Axl Rose. I mean,
yeah, I think that might be true.
Older than who are the other pops? Oh, you know who's 60? Madonna. Madonna and Prince would both be 61, I think. Prince would be. Madonna is.
But we kind of live in the post-garbage barge world. We live in the world made by that barge. Mm-hmm. Do you talk about your recycling situation? I know here at your homestead here, your temporary quarters here before you move into your new bunker, you've got a section of the dining room that's roped off for cardboard, newsprint, mixed plastics.
Tin, aluminum. There's quite a bit.
How much tin are you producing?
There's a certain amount of tin, but we're saving that for the war effort.
Bronze.
There's as is true, I think, in a lot of West Coast cities, there's a lot of sort of wiggle about what is recyclable and what isn't.
Are you like me? Do you have a massive chart posted in your kitchen so that you can consult?
I have the chart like memorized.
You go horizontally, then you go vertically, and you're like, dairy tubs, yes.
But that's the problem with me is that this is stuff that I overthink. And also, it's a contemporary gauge war. It's also a thing that tears families apart from inside.
Recycling does?
Yes. Is this recyclable or not?
Who put this yogurt lid in the recycling? Right. We talked about this last week.
This is not 3.5 inches diameter. It is not recyclable. One of the people in this household where I currently reside believes that things that should be recyclable are recyclable.
Right. You could, by force of will.
Right. This should be recyclable, the person says. And I say, but unfortunately, it isn't recyclable. And they say, but it should be, and they put it in the recycling.
There should be two boxes. Regular trash is recyclable, should be recyclable.
Should be recyclable. And I think their mentality is, if they keep sending things that should be recyclable to the recycling,
they'll finally have enough of them,
yeah.
And the economy of scale will change.
That's right. People at that end will gradually be shamed into recycling it, because they're like, oh, another one of these like salad spinners. I guess we need to open a new wing.
Just the other day, I had an unpleasant experience of taking out a bag of trash, which appeared to be recycling because somebody had put the new empty milk gallon carton on top.
Right.
And so believing that everything below the three things that, you know, that carton and some other dairy tub were also going to be recycling, I dumped it without a second look into the recycling dumpster, only to find a juicy mixed garbage mess all over my carefully cleaned cardboard and newsprint and tin.
What I learned the other day was that here in the neighborhood, like I'm building my new bunker, recycling and yard waste are on alternate weeks.
Oh, we have that. You don't have that?
Well, we have it here.
Oh, no, wait. I think we have yard waste every week, but recycling only on alternate weeks.
But in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, United States. We don't want to piss off the guy that hates when we say Toronto, Canada.
Portland, United States, but it's the other Portland. It's West Portland, United States, right. Not East Portland.
Portland, Cascadia.
Portland has garbage pickup every other week and recycling and yard waste every week.
You know what? That's what I found. Like, recycling is expansive enough here now that I produce, in volume at least, 2 to 3 times the recycling as regular trash. I downsized to this little toy gauge regular trash dumpster because I hardly produce any.
But it's typical sort of Portland nanny state that's enforced.
Guess what?
But it's very frustrating out here because I'll fill up a yard waste container. I mean, basically every time I walk out the door, I just fill up yard waste containers as I walk down the street.
You just vomit grass clippings from your fingertips.
I'm the Johnny Appleseed of English ivy. But it takes me a long time to fill up a garbage container, but it's the, why don't you pick up recycling every week? It drives me absolutely up a tree.
Our recycling is always over full, which means there's spare recycling sitting in a cardboard box, which is allowed, but it's now wet cardboard box because it's Seattle. Also, the issue with the Portland issue, I would think, with regular trash only every 2 weeks is how much longer every doggy poop bag is going to sit in a hot can.
Ugh. Well, you shouldn't put doggy poop in yard waste.
Are you saying it should be recyclable?
It should absolutely not.
No, it's terrible. I'm saying it's in regular waste.
Oh, it's in the garbage.
But if Portland is only taking that every other week.
Oh, it's a hot, stinky mess.
Sure.
Right? But anymore, it feels like a lot of the recycling that I do is just some sort of performative gaslighting on the part of the industrial world.
They're just making you...
They've convinced me that that putting all these different things into this blue bin means that they go off and are... And through some super train process are turned into park benches and birdseed. And in fact, what they're doing is they're being put on barges and dumped in the ocean.
They're turned into park benches and then the park benches are dumped in the ocean, I think. So you are wised up. You are a good liberal who believes that recycling helps Mother Earth, but you also have heard on some level that it's kind of a con.
I'm a good liberal and a cynic. Which is the best liberal?
Yeah, we call those the Sinbrals.
Yeah, we call them Generation X, the worst generation.
So the root of this kind of schizophrenic love affair we have with recycling in America today actually dates back to one particular barge. A barge piled high with, as you might have guessed from our Chuck D-like consonants, garbage.
Garbage.
In 1987...
You were still in high school, or barely. You weren't even in high school.
I was a middle schooler.
Wow.
You were in grad school.
That's right. I was in the School of Hard Knocks by then.
You were riding the rails, probably.
Mm-hmm. In 87, I was.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So do you feel like you're kind of disconnected from the current events of 1987 because you didn't get Donahue in your boxcar?
The thing about 1987 is it was still a time when information was embargoed to 3 channels, 4 newspapers, and 6 magazines. So all you had to do was walk past a newsstand.
Just make sure your boxcar had Newsweek.
Yeah, right. I mean, all that had to happen was that you at some point tune in and you could get everything in one turkey dinner flavored pill, and then, you know,
was it like Willy Wonka? Like you could see each news event happening to your face?
Yeah.
Oh no, Exxon Valdez, this tastes terrible.
Snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Just as an aside, about you mentioned kind of the density of media today, the density of incident.
You are my density
in the world. Like there's too many garbage barges to track.
There are.
So I just saw a count of news density done by measuring the number of full page width New York Times headlines in any given year.
Oh.
And for much of the Obama era, there was roughly 7 full width New York Times headlines per year.
Say like Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. When that happened
during the Obama administration,
he was very angry.
Yeah.
But he sent John Kerry over and it all worked out.
Dow falls 3,000 points.
Yeah, I'm trying to even think what would have happened that was big.
During the Obama administration.
The Missouri suburb. Ferguson happens. It said right, Ferguson happens in big letters.
Or Affordable Care Act passes.
There you go. Black president elected.
Right.
I didn't like how they kept running that headline.
Black president elected.
Really?
Every day for 6 months.
What are you guys doing? Okay, so we are only in June. We're less than halfway through 2020, and there have been 33 full-width headlines in the New York Times this year.
What is possible? Well, I mean, I guess this has been a banner year.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And I'm sure some of this is some kind of stylistic change, but the growth from 7 to 33, I think, is mostly driven by actual news incidents and not by any kind of editorial change.
Right. I mean, every day you wake up and go, please, please, let me just open the internet and have it be full of stupid garbage barge and not...
We're on pace for a 60 or 70 full-width headline year, every one or two a week.
We can't sustain this. We can't... The center won't hold.
So, I mean, my interest doesn't hold, basically.
Yeah.
Like, the headline literally will say, 3,000 Americans won't die, and then it'll be that shrugging text emoji. You know? And I'm just like, yeah, just like Tuesday, we get it. But in 1987, when there was less news, a single boat could really captivate a nation. And what had happened was the landfills of Staten Island, this is all a huge Rube Goldberg machine that starts when the landfills of Staten Island.
It all starts there.
Everything starts there.
That's right.
A lot of zombie movies start there.
Fresh Kills is where it all begins. Right.
There's a lot of probably fraudulent Republican voters buried there. Mm. They announced, it's discovered that the high water table of Staten Island means that Fresh Kills, the Fresh Kills that are inhabiting Fresh Kills are leaching into the, contaminating the water table, and the landfills of Staten Island are going to have to close.
So we should say that that a kill,
right,
in the context of Staten Island is,
I don't want to look it up. Some kind of water feature.
A kill is a canal.
Didn't we do this once? It's a stream or a.
It's a water course. And so in and it's descended from the Dutch language. It's just a way that nowhere else in America describes their little waterways as kills, but they do in the borough of Staten Island and in northern New Jersey.
I just looked it up, by the way, and I can settle this. The dictionary defines kill as an act of killing, especially of one animal by another.
Hmm.
So I hope that helps.
There's got to be a further definition. Keep reading.
To switch off a light or engine?
Nope.
To delete a line, paragraph, or file?
No.
To overwhelm someone with emotion, as in, you're killing me. The suspense is killing me.
Is that really to overwhelm with emotion? The suspense is killing me, I guess.
Is suspense an emotion?
Not really.
I guess the reaction to suspense could be an emotion.
I suppose. Keep going.
I just ran out. I actually do not know if it's in.
Kill, krill.
Small phytoplankton.
Shulkill.
Fish kill. That's why we mentioned it. Like, we mentioned fish kill on Omnibus for some reason. And we explained
a kill is a body of water, most commonly a creek, but also a tidal inlet, river, strait, or arm of the sea, derived from the Middle Dutch kille, or kill in modern Dutch, meaning riverbed or water channel.
Merriam-Webster says often capitalized, and I don't know if I agree with that.
It is often capitalized.
I'm not going to capitalize that. I'm not going to capitalize my kills.
So the Arthur kill is the big kill between New Jersey and Staten Island. That's the one that's like the real cut. But we talk about Fresh Kill a lot because it is where the 9/11 waste was. There was a big landfill there, and that's where all of the rubble from 9/11 was dumped.
Yeah, I mean that was the biggest landfill for the tri-state area. Is Fresh Kill still open? No,
they covered it over and made it into tennis courts, right?
Oh, that's not the one that's. I mean, Flushing Meadows is an old Robert Moses era project to cover. Like, what is now Flushing Meadows was a
landfill
dump. Fish Kills is being developed as a redeveloped as a park. Yeah, so it will be at some point.
Yeah.
But at this time, a ton of New York's garbage went out to
Kill Van Kull is my favorite.
You have favorite kills?
I do. I like the Kill Van Kull. I've been across it a bunch of times. I just feel like it's a good old kill. It's the kill that goes between Staten Island and Jersey City. So if you go across the Bay on Bridge, it's the one that you're going across. I don't know. I got opinions about everything, Ken.
You do have opinions about a lot of kills. And because this landfill was closing, that becomes a new waste management problem for New York.
It's seepage, right?
Yeah. Leachate is what they call it. Ugh. Water goes through yards and yards of trash, and basically it percolates.
Takes all the mercury and, right. and iodine out.
Heavy metals. I mean, it's not just gross rotting stuff. I mean, you don't want that in your water, but that could be filtered. Right. But yeah, it could have heavy metals and stuff. So it's a problem for groundwater, and that's something that can close a landfill. So in the middle of this, searching for new landfill solutions, enter Salvatore Avellino.
Hey.
Now, I don't want you to jump to any conclusions.
All right.
Just because he's a Long Island businessman who controls all of the trash hauling contracts on Long Island.
Okay.
And has an Italian-American name.
I'm waiting.
I don't want you to assume that he's mobbed up.
Okay. I'm gonna take this all at face value.
Okay.
But Salvatore.
But he is completely mobbed up.
Okay.
Like, I just don't want you to assume it.
He's in charge of the trash in New Jersey.
In Long Island. We just get notes from people when we make, when you do, basically it's when you do your Italian accent.
Oh, when I do my Italian accent.
Yeah, so you can do it now.
But you do an Italian accent.
You're giving me the trash of contract. I know I kill you.
The reason I get the letters is that I have a good Italian accent, whereas yours is terrible.
It's a Mario.
Hey.
And Avellino, knows a good opportunity when he sees one. He partners with a guy named Lowell Harrison, who I have to assume is not mobbed up because his name is Lowell Harrison.
He sounds pretty waspy.
Maybe he's their wartime conciliary.
Yeah, that's...
their peacetime conciliary, I guess.
He works for the Washington Post.
Together, they cook up a deal whereby they can buy 3,000 tons of Long Island trash and get paid $86 a ton.
Wait a minute, they're not... They're buying it and they're getting paid $86 a ton?
They're taking it off their hands.
So they're not buying it.
Sorry.
They're schlepping it.
That's right.
They're getting paid to schlep.
They are, selling it?
It's a futures market.
Do we not have a verb for when somebody pays you to take something? It's the opposite of buy. It's yub.
They're yubbing it.
They're yubbing it for $86 a ton. And they've worked out a plan by which they can take it down to Louisiana, and for a mere $5 a ton, they can offload it for methane capture. This is a new process. Because, rotting trash produces a ton. In fact, 11% of all human methane comes from landfills.
Oh, I know it.
And this is a big greenhouse gas. And more to the point, it's the greenhouse gas you can do something about. Carbon dioxide will stay in the atmosphere for centuries.
Methane you can capture and use to barbecue.
Yeah, and it only lasts for like a decade. So you can really do short-term climate benefit by pulling methane out of the air. And there's you make natural gas out of it.
Right.
There's a market for it. So not only is he, Salvatore can be making money
three different ways.
On both ends here. Yeah, three ways.
If he partners with the people in Louisiana and ends up profit sharing from the sale of the methane.
Yeah, I think it's only two ways. I think he is still going to pay $5 a ton to Louisiana to get the stuff buried there.
And they're making cash.
But he's going to share in some of the methane revenue in addition to what he's getting from.
See, this is why we can't tax the rich, Ken, because they make money making money.
Like, if we kept a businessman like this from moving garbage from New York to Louisiana with onerous tax rates, he would just be like, I'm not going to move this trash to Louisiana.
This is why communism failed. Because in Hungary, there was somebody that said, I want to buy this trash and sell it to another trash person. And the Hungarian government was like, can't do it. Can't do it. And so the trash just...
Salvatore will just sit there.
Just piled up. It filled in the river.
You taxing me? I taxing you. He's going to say, you come here and this is the day of my daughter's wedding? I don't know why Mario is Don Corleone now.
So this seems like a good deal to everybody?
He's going to make so much money. Unfortunately, it's a very hastily conceived plan. And his partner, Lowell Harrison, who's supposed to be the ideas guy.
He's the preppy face.
He gets the dots, the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Right.
While
he talks to City Hall.
While Avellino is, whacking Sonny or whatever. He is unable to do the deal with Louisiana, but he thinks he can make a deal with Moorhead, North Carolina to get a methane capture operation up and running.
Sure. Moorhead is the Louisiana of North Carolina.
So the Mobro 4000... Which really sounds like a future haircutting robot, maybe?
Yeah, the Mobro.
It's short for Moody Brothers of Jacksonville. It's just a barge making outfit out of Florida.
Sure.
So the Mobro 4000.
I knew Florida had to get involved at some point.
The Florida man makes the garbage barge of tomorrow, the Mobro 4000, and it leaves Long Island heading for Moorhead, North Carolina, with 3,200 tons of outer borough garbage aboard.
How did they get the garbage onto the barge?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Like, it's a big, huge pile of garbage, a big pile of leaching garbage, But it's got to get onto the barge somehow. Was it just like a bunch of guys with
cranes?
It's going to
be bulldozers, right?
Yeah, like I guess.
It's just going to be like a, like I'm imagining this landfill with big yellow equipment pushing this stuff onto a boat.
Think about the number of guys named Pussy that had no work contracts that were sitting in folding chairs watching this go.
Eating cannoli. But however it gets loaded. Unfortunately, as it's approaching Morehead, North Carolina, some kind of local enterprising action news reporter.
Oh, boy.
You know.
1987.
I think it's April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
She does a piece on this, and
she had so much feathered hair. Right. I can picture her now.
On Action 6 News or whatever.
Big shoulder pads in her gray jacket.
She does a piece on the Mobro 4000, and visible in her coverage is a bedpan. This turns out to be a pivotal bedpan.
Huh. Maybe. People recognize what a bedpan is, and they don't want it in their neighborhood.
Well, it's full of urine. The problem with a bedpan is it's suggestive of medical waste. And this would not be the first time that the Long Island or Jersey mob has tried to solve a trash problem when there was medical waste mixed up in the commercial and residential trash, and they said there wasn't.
So when was the environmental disaster where a barge full of medical waste dumped it in the ocean and all of the syringes washed up in New Jersey?
I had totally forgotten that, but the syringe tides were 87 and 88.
So exactly
the same time frame. Yeah, and this, honestly, this Action 6 News might have been a response to this.
Because that was very traumatic, even to those of us watching from the West Coast. The idea that you would go down to the beach on a summer day and syringes
just poking up out of the sand
were washing up on the beaches, like it really felt like, and that was also a Fresh Kills originated problem.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's maybe the first time I heard of Fresh Kills.
It's but no feet.
No, it's not like a Vancouver, Canada foot infestation.
I'd rather be in the foot part of the country than the syringe part of the country. The feet gross you out, but
They're kind of contained.
I would never go to the beach again if there might be needles sticking out of the sand.
They're contained in tennis shoes, the feet.
Sure.
If it was a tennis shoe full of syringes, it wouldn't be an issue, but there's syringes everywhere.
And that's like a legitimate public health issue. This is not just some blue nose panic. I mean, we were...
This is height of the AIDS crisis, right? So syringes, hoo-hoo-hoo.
I mean, just, did we talk about this before? We were volunteering at a at a kind of a lunch kitchen type place, and my daughter was organizing some of the canned goods in the boxes, and she poked her finger on some needle that was just sitting on a shelf, you know, left over from whatever homeless person had decided to use that closet.
Oh,
briefly.
No.
So she had to go get HEP and HIV testing.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, you don't want to mess around with needles, but you're right. I mean, the hysteria over, over AIDS at the time would have made this rational hysteria probably
irrational.
Added some irrational to it as well.
Yeah.
And the city fathers of Morehead, North Carolina are saying...
I should say, and I hate to interrupt you, but you know, the needle tide or whatever actually ended up in We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel.
What's the lyric?
He actually references hypodermics.
Hypodermics on the shore.
That's right.
And then he says, I.K. Brunel Gage Wars.
Yeah, no, Lenny says, Bruce and Lester Banks, birthday party cheesecake.
No, Rock and Roller Cola Wars. So Morehead, North Carolina refuses the barge. And in fact, there is no medical waste aboard the Mobro 4000.
It's just regular good old-fashioned waste.
It's mostly commercial. It's office waste. It's cardboard. It's papers.
Oh.
Foam rubber. Maybe some refrigerators.
That stuff would just bulk up North Carolina.
Maybe a tire or two. Uh-huh. Yeah, so North Carolina is... unreasonably upset because of what appears to be a single image of a bedpan.
Well, and this is old North Carolina too. This is the North Carolina of the '80s.
They don't want your Yankee problems and your Yankee trash.
This is Jesse Helms, North Carolina.
So that leaves the Mobro 4000 without a destination. So for the next couple of months, what you have is a It's a tugboat, by the way, the Break of Dawn with its three-man crew.
I love that, the Break of Dawn.
What a nice name for a tugboat. Have you ever wanted to be a tugboat captain?
The Break of Dawn. I really, really did. You know, growing up in Puget Sound as a kid, we lived over in Kingston, Washington, when I was little. And the tugboats were the most prominent feature on the landscape at the time. You know, this is before huge container ships plied our inland waterway.
Oh, I remember. A tugboat with a barge was the most exciting thing you might see.
Oh, the Foss tugboats, like the really big, beautiful ones with their, you know, their motors were so powerful that you could hear them from miles and miles away if you were close to the shore. You know, you'd hear that before you could even see them. I love the tugboats.
The mating call of the tugboat.
I really did dream about working on a tugboat, and now I realize that my whole life has been a sham.
Are you going to leave in the middle of this podcast?
I feel like, what am I doing?
Footsteps, cut, 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 slam. That's the sound of you becoming a tugboat captain. So this crew of three ends up pushing this barge down the...
They're pushing it, not pulling it.
That's a good question. They're probably pulling it, actually. I just saw a picture. I think they're pulling it. Pulling this barge down the eastern seaboard. North Carolina doesn't want the trash. Alabama doesn't want the trash. Mississippi doesn't want the trash. Louisiana... Oh,
so they went around Florida.
Louisiana and Texas all refusing the trash. And Florida. And that's now every state. I guess South Carolina and Georgia were not asked, apparently, because they're not on my list. But every other state on the Gulf refuses this 3,200 tons of trash.
You would think before you made the trip all the way to Texas that you could have made a few phone calls.
Come on, Lowell Harrison.
Right? It's not like, oh, let's just take it next door. This has got to be taking weeks. I remember this, though. I mean, this was a... This like barge on its lonely quest, with every passing day, it became more and more of a saga. It's really a saga.
It is a saga because it's it's a single boat at sea with no hope of getting, you know, with no destination. Nobody wants it. All eyes are on it. Governments start refusing it. The government of Mexico says they won't take it. The government of Belize says they won't take it. The government of the Bahamas
is this says all they because won't take it. It now has a reputation as a medical waste, like a barge teeming with hepatitis, or is it just that that Guatemala doesn't want to take something that North Carolina didn't want?
Yeah, this is domino effect from North Carolina refusing the trash. Nobody wants to be trash's plan B,
right?
If New York and North Carolina both said no here?
North Carolina's too good for it.
And I think, now that I'm looking at a map of the route, and it seems like maybe it did not go all the way into the Gulf. I mean, maybe there were phone calls. I'm not sure it got farther than Key West. But...
Interesting. It got to Key West and then could already tell it wasn't going to be welcome in Galveston.
Oh no, this is not true. It was well into the Gulf of Mexico by the time that a second landfill in Louisiana, in Avondale, Louisiana, had agreed to take it, and then the state shut that down while the Break of Dawn and the barge are tooting across the Gulf of Mexico.
Huh.
And at that point, Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas are already say no. And in Belize, in fact, the military, I'm sure the Belizean military is like, is three guys in a dinghy, but they're ordered to keep careful surveillance.
Belize too.
I was in Belize a couple months ago and it feels like a rinky dink operation. The country is a medium sized city and there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, the military is ordered to keep an eye on the barge to make sure nobody tries to get it on board. So they go back to Key West and they stop there to try to figure out what they're going to do. And it's not such a bad life for the crew of three aboard the tugboat. They say there's no smell really, because it really is just, you know, old clothes and carpet scraps, but they're getting flies every time every time they get close to land, they get flies and the flies follow them. And so they get the flies from North Carolina. They get the flies from Louisiana.
No.
Every time they get close, they get more flies.
How long will a fly follow a barge?
This might be the test case.
Like, how far can a fly migrate?
Well, I mean, you've effectively given it a new island to live on. So
right.
you've created a new ecosystem miles off the coast of Key West. And America is just going nuts because it's such an unlikely story and it's not clear how it's going to end. And it really kind of speaks to a kind of new environmental feeling that this is some sign. This is the canary in the coal mine of some new crisis. Johnny Carson,
of course,
is making jokes every night about.
Of course.
Did you hear about this, Ed? This garbage barge. Maybe we could send it to the Ayatollah in Iran.
Yes, you are right, sir.
Dan Rather. This is great. Dan Rather is quoted as saying this is the most watched garbage barge in history.
And you have to
wonder,
sure,
what he thinks is in second place.
It's setting a new standard. I mean, Dan Rather of all of us probably was watching more garbage barges than your average American.
Yeah, he's probably got his finger on the pulse. Finally, they turn around at Key West and they head back north, where everybody is kind of preemptively saying, New Jersey saying, no, we're not going
to
take it.
Right, it's coming back. Well, you know, and all of this, these guys have got to be bleeding money at this point.
$6,000 a day it is costing to keep this, $1,987.
Salvatore thought he was going to make an easy buck.
Yeah, what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to shake down their strip clubs or something.
Yeah.
And finally, Ed Koch, the mayor of New York at the time.
There he is. Ed Koch, problem solver.
Tries to make some deal to find a home for it in Queens, a home for the trash. And he says, we're going to treat this like...
It came from New York and back to New York.
Yeah, by way of Belize. And Koch says, you know, we're going to treat this like Germany treated Lenin. You know, like when Lenin returned from Switzerland... Oh, to yeah. Russia, it was in some sealed train car.
Right.
And this was Koch's approach. Like, you know, nobody's going to have to worry about this. You know, I don't want any communities up in arms. New Jersey doesn't have to worry. Staten Island doesn't have to worry. Nobody's going to see the trash.
New York's going to take it. Yeah. Take care of it.
And then the Queens Bureau Council files a restraining order saying, like, we don't know what's in this. They said, like, now that it's been to Belize, they're like, this thing could be, even if this was certified as just being carpet scraps, like, this could have any kind of tropical insects and vermin, they say.
Oh, I see. So even though it didn't touch down in Belize,
sure,
it attracted some Belizean flies who are now mating with the Louisiana flies
and this
over
is,
the garbage
And this barge. Is some kind of Northern Hemisphere paranoia that just by touching the developing world of Latin America, we've now got insects and vermin.
Now, I know that this is maybe a culturally a little bit of a stretch, but... The Queens rapper LL Cool J had a song shortly after this called To the Break of Dawn. Do you think that he was referencing the break of dawn and the scandal of this garbage?
Like we thought he was talking about, I don't know the song, but probably Rocking Some Lady till the break of dawn.
You know, it was because Sugar Hill Gang had in Rapper's Delight, there's a reference to like, the beat goes on till the break of dawn.
I see. It's a party.
And so, yeah, it's like you keep going.
But he was also the hottest rapper, the one whose pecs the ladies admired. They do love him.
True.
It's in his name.
Ladies do love Cool J.
You can't deny that ladies love Cool J.
But you know, the Queens connection, the break of dawn, it all seems to be.
You think it might be about a tugboat?
I'm feeling like.
Do you think Dan Rather would think that was the world's best rap song about a tugboat?
We can't discount it. It's possible. Inspiration comes a myriad of ways.
So over 2 months later, the trash is finally, over the objections of the Queens and Brooklyn Bureau presidents, returns back to Islip, New York, where it started, where it's it docks in Brooklyn, it's incinerated there, and I think it's the ashes are returned to the Islip town dump, exactly where it started.
Oh, but it's incinerated.
Yes, to get rid of, I assume. All the tropical grody,
wow,
creepy crawlies,
and all of the flies too go up in what probably is recorded in fly history as the greatest Holocaust of all time.
The flies all fly away and probably become an invasive species.
Uh-huh.
in Iceland.
They become murder hornets.
In New York. Yeah, that's where the murder hornets came from. But the voyage of the barge itself is strange enough. But what happens to America is even stranger, like having to confront these images. I mean, images on a TV are powerful.
Yes.
You could argue that it was TV coverage that dwindled away American support for the Vietnam War, for example, in right. a way that, you know, even it's the pictures of the flag-draped coffins that the Pentagon doesn't want you to see.
More than the coffins themselves.
Exactly. And you know, very vivid, the famous photo of the crying girl, the video of the Buddhist monk, you know, the image is a powerful thing.
Right.
So America has been told that we're facing environmental crises, possible global warming, possible mass species die-offs. But suddenly here's an image on the news every night to say, now it's actually happening. Look, there's no room for this trash.
That's right. And the implication is that by the time we arrived at a place where the garbage was overflowing onto barges to be taken other places, when those places say you can't bring your garbage here, your mind imagines that meanwhile, more barges are filling up with garbage in Staten Island, also looking for a home. The earth soon is crisscrossed with orphan barges. At least that's what I imagined.
Yeah, New York City generates 40,000 tons of garbage a day. So, like, if this little barge and little cute little Scuffy the tugboat can't find a home, what hope is there for the rest of us? So it seems like an impending omen of ecological disaster.
Right.
And the EPA springs into action.
Hey, there they are. And did they turn off all the ghost catching devices and cause dogs and cats to start sleeping together?
It's true, John. This man has no... At the time, the recycling had not taken off in America. Recycling was maybe like 15% of American eligible garbage was recycled.
Right.
And the EPA immediately says, you know, we've seen this, we've heard your concern. It's obviously a media-friendly concern, so we are going to act.
Everyone turns to the EPA.
Even though the president was Republican, the EPA would still do stuff, which is maybe not true of our era.
America's most beloved institution, the Environmental Protection
Agency. I've been doing a bunch of... EPA is a common crossword entry, and the clue will often be like, agency that's concerned with toxic waste. And every time I do it today, I'm like, no, they're not. I mean, maybe 3 years ago they were, but they're really not.
Not anymore.
So the EPA sets a hard target. 25% of U.S. trash will be recycled by the year 1990, whatever. And states start setting even harder targets.
Like, by 1970, we're going to go land a man on the moon.
We're
going to
land a trash barge on Belize and bring him safely back to Earth. New York and California set a 50% target. Rhode Island sets the highest one in the country. Rhode Island says we can recycle 70% of our trash.
That's what they say about Rhode Island. National leader.
Leader in trash. And so this is kind of the dawn of our modern era of being very concerned about just how much we're recycling and feeling like it's never enough because we're in this precarious position.
I had no idea that this was the, because when you think about it, of course, I don't remember recycling.
You'd keep your pop bottles if there was a 3 cent refund.
Yeah. And I think we always recognize that you could recycle aluminum cans. Right? Aluminum was valuable, but we didn't put, and I guess, do you remember newspaper drives?
Yes, but like from World War II. Were you going to fight the Hun? Like, what were you guys doing? So newsprint is extremely recyclable. Newspapers can be reprinted on recycled paper that comes from 100% other newsprint, and it's fine. And that used to be a huge use of trees. Like, forests were disappearing to the Washington Post because there'd be two editions a day and right. millions of copies.
That's
not a problem anymore for newspapers.
My Cub Scout troop in the mid-70s recycled newsprint, and we would fill up tractor trailers with newsprint gathered from all the sort of neighborhoods around Innis Arden. It was like a big, it was my first experience with recycling.
Our recycling fervor doesn't last long before it butts up against what new movements always butt up against, which is cranky contrarianism.
Oh, my second favorite.
In 1996, John Turney, a journalist, writes a long piece in, I think, the New York Times Sunday Magazine called Recycling is Garbage.
Oh, boy.
And this is the origin of what has kind of become the new conventional wisdom about recycling, which is, you thought it was good, but guess what? It's not.
Oh, this is the origin. It goes this far back.
1996 is kind of the origin of every libertarian or just clever, self-consciously clever, dumb contrarian of all types, and I guess I repeat myself there, telling you that actually you're a dope and recycling's bad.
Right.
Because John Turney, who is kind of a libertarian, contrarian guy, like if you've ever read a thing about how Silent Spring was junk science, or the Obama administration was dumb for new regulation on X, like that was probably John Turney.
I've read them all.
This is his beat. And he's got a beef with recycling in this very long piece, which holds that it's unprofitable.
Right.
You know, he makes a big thing about how much time it takes each person to sort their garbage.
Sure.
And if you were to actually pay that person a wage for that
time.
That's
a lost money.
That's what I think in my kitchen when I'm separating this stuff. Is like, if I were getting...
I'd get $100 an hour.
If I were
getting
$15 an hour here, and you could, and he points out that if you did take those costs into account, it would actually be cheaper to, you could actually take all that recycling and build a used car out of it and buy it from a Toyota lot. Like you could turn it into a Toyota Tercel and buy it at the cost of a used car, and that would still be more cost effective.
Wait, if I made a Toyota Tercel out of garbage, why would I then buy it?
Or, you know, you sell it to
someone. I see the flaw in his logic.
You sell it to someone else. You have to yub the Tercel. I don't know how you're going to make a Tercel out of dairy tubs and yogurt lids.
Well, you've clearly never tried to make a Tercel.
I mean, you've got a ton of tin in your dining room. So
yeah, and recycled newspaper.
So you're ahead of the neighbors. And you've got all the recycled newspaper from Innes Arden. so he points out that it's inefficient.
Yeah.
You know, that that a lot of these recycling processes take more... Oh, people get mad when I say processes. Processes, like the Canadians say.
Processes.
A lot of these processes take more energy than it would to, you know, cut down new trees and make new paper.
Right.
Or to make new plastic or whatever. And more to the point, it's just unnecessary.
Liberal cucks being liberal cucks.
The visual of the barge was misleading, he points out. This one barge was having a series of problems due to some bad regulatory and PR and mob logic luck.
Yeah, it's a not all barges issue.
Right. But in fact, New York is still exporting 7 Mobro 4000s a day full of trash, and they all go somewhere just fine. And what he points out is that really, if you project out America's garbage production for the next 1,000 years.
Right.
And you take America's garbage for the year 3000 and you bury it 100 yards deep.
We're probably talking to America's garbage from the year 3000.
You've actually seen this happen, folks. So this is John Turney predicting the city where you now live. 100 yards deep of garbage. It would actually fit in a square 35 miles on a side.
Okay.
And you can see what he's doing here. He's making it sound tiny.
Oh, I see. 35 miles per side. That is Rhode Island.
He's saying 100 yards by saying, instead of 300 feet, so you don't have to imagine a 30-story building of garbage. This is a lot of garbage.
Right. It's just 100 yards.
And then he's saying 35 miles square instead of saying over 1,000 square miles, which he very easily could say.
Right.
But he wants to point out that all of our garbage could be compressed into a small cube, and it would be, you know, the size of a small national forest or whatever. Like, it's not going to be the overflowing landfill situation that we imagined. And I don't know if you had this experience growing up in the 80s. We've talked about 80s Cold War paranoia, but I also had 80s environmental paranoia.
For sure.
In the post-Greenpeace era.
For sure.
Like, the acid rain was going to melt our statues.
We were going to lose all of our forests, and then we would have no more oxygen.
The rainforest is burning down, and then how do we breathe?
Well,
a list of cute animals like harp seals and manatees that are losing habitat.
Those tiny little owls that people were going to barbecue up here in towns like Randall and Packwood.
And this was all true, by the way. Like, there is a mass extinction going on. The rainforest is getting burned down. Like,
right.
Like, my hippy-dippy fourth grade teacher was not wrong.
Look, I'm not mocking it.
But it just, in a very visceral way, we were told to imagine just these choked skies and, in particular, garbage just coming out of the ground. And I remember our fourth grade class
garbage fountains.
Trying to brainstorm what we would do. And I remember just being very smart. I was thinking, well, this all came from mines, right? It came from petroleum, and let's just shove it back down the mines. And I felt like I was going to get the Nobel Prize for this suggestion. But this was just how visceral the idea was, that the ground was just teeming with tires and refrigerators.
Well, you know, I became a recycling nut because I believed that all of these things could be then reduced to their constituent parts. And we've done an omnibus episode on everything into oil, which you recall.
Everything into oil.
Everything into oil.
Please do not quiz me about...
that. Oh, we were talking about that being an addenda episode where we quiz each other on old episodes.
True or false? We did an episode on everything into oil. True. True or false? Did I mention... Yeah, I think I could give you a sentence summary of every episode we've done, but that's probably about it.
But you remember the idea I put forth on my other podcast, Roderick on the Line, the invention of the super train, which was a train that went from landfill to landfill with a giant claw and took all the old refrigerators that were full of trace elements of molybdenum and
cobalt
and recycled it all down and turned into and basically made Toyota Torcells the entire way, sold them and then rebought them.
It just produces a track made of Toyota Tercels as you go spitting them out from right. The front of the train.
So this is what I believed. I mean, this wasn't going to bring back the spotted owl or the rainforest, except by extension, we would need to kill fewer spotted owls because we would be recycling more newspaper.
You're certainly going to be mad about John Turney's idea of making just one big 1,000-square-mile landfill, because where does your train go?
Just around the landfill. It'd be a narrow gauge train.
It's like Disneyland. Just,
yeah, you'd just it's build a, little just
a,
tunnels.
A and, train around the edge that you just take when your feet are tired.
Choo-choo.
And Turney also points out that this 1,000-square-mile landfill he wants to kind of wave away with his hands would be environmentally benign.
Who like is this ding-dong, by the way? Who is Turney? Is he like a thinker, or is he just just some dope with a show on Fox?
Well, he's probably still alive. He's a living libertarian who probably has online fans. So let's say nice things about him, or they're going to be they're going to be dicks to us.
He might listen to the show. You know, we have a lot of listeners. He could be one, and he could be right now composing an angry letter.
Well, just
send it to Ken at.
To this day, if you find an article actualing you by saying that the gender pay gap is not real, or that e-cigarettes shouldn't be regulated, or whatever it is.
Right.
It's going to come from this
agree
guy.
Because both.
Because we all do. But because, you know, this kind of unthinking liberal misinformation is like catnip to this guy. And this is 1996. This is kind of ground zero for this belief that I think we all kind of have that, well, you know, I know I'm doing the right thing here, but a lot of this recycling is kind of bogus.
Yeah.
And it's true and it's not true. He is not wrong in that there are plenty of recycling processes where it takes
processes
in Canada, processoirs in Quebec, that require more energy going in than going out. Like aluminum and steel are the most efficient things to recycle.
Right. And aluminum,
there's not a lot of it.
Costs money.
It takes a lot of money to get aluminum out of the ground.
It's a lot easier to take old steel and turn it into new steel than it is to take ore and turn it into steel.
Plus all the environmental impacts of getting that stuff out of the ground as it gets harder and harder. Newsprint also, as I've mentioned, is pretty good way to save some trees. But mixed paper and plastics are kind of a nightmare to recycle. And that's not something that's gotten much better today. There's just so many different kinds of plastic.
Glass is easy to recycle.
Glass is pretty good, yeah. And you don't have to separate by color. I guess that's a myth.
Maybe, oh, really?
I don't know what you do. You just recycle everything into brown glass?
We used
that,
to
like, recycle. Artisanal ginger beers come in?
So now, I think we've talked about this on the show before, but I feel like some of this stuff, aluminum and glass, could be recycled in the home, in the sense that you could build a little engine, a little aluminum smelter, and smelt it down into ingots.
This is your Chairman Mao idea, that everybody should have a little...
And then a truck comes by and you put like your 10 ingots out there and you get $32.
Well, the home version of this that you really can do is the two things that come before recycle. You know, you can reduce or reuse.
Right.
And you know, if you can find some way to reuse your aluminum can by collecting baking grease in it or something.
Right. Well, that's using it twice. You've used it then and used it again. So I guess, yeah, you didn't have to go buy a
new aluminum can like I often do. And I just get some flavor of soup I don't like that's on sale. I pour the soup down the drain.
And then use it as a grease trap.
And then I catch baking grease in it.
Do you buy and consume beverages in plastic bottles at your home?
Not very much.
Right.
I feel like we're mostly an aluminum can family. And that's better, right?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, you can make all the plastic bottles into bird feeders and whatnot. Like, all the reduce, reuse, recycle is like, you know, arts and crafts projects, really.
Several years ago, I went to, I was invited to attend the Conference on World Affairs at the University of Colorado. And one of the panels I was on featured a guy who had kind of an amazing resume, one of these people at the Conference on World Affairs where you're like, oh, he's this kind of scientist, but he also invented the hot air balloon, and he also he worked for the Defense Department, and he had all these accolades. And every panel he was on, and I saw him several times, he found a way to turn the conversation to the fact that plastic bottles were full of this BP hormone, and even the ones that said that they didn't have it, they were lying. They had just changed the name of MSG to something else. And he actually would rant, like once he got started, he would go crazy. Don't let your daughters drink out of plastic bottles. Like, they would have to pull him off the microphone.
BPA,
and he was convinced that it was causing 9-year-old girls to go through puberty. It was, you know, it was leaching into the soils and making us all liberals. It was like
making the frogs gay.
It was really bad stuff. So recycling it or no, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's the issue with plastics, I think, is that, you know, plastics require fossil fuels to make.
Right.
And in theory, that's something we're trying to wrap up as much as possible.
You want to think.
So do you remember the news story about Lego trying to figure out some bioplastic that's just as good as Lego plastic so they can do it without petroleum products? I think they did. Like, within a year, they were like, yeah, we did it. We've made the new... They're Scandinavian. They can do anything.
Sure. And what is it made out of? Potato starch?
Yeah. It's onions. It's all the potatoes you're not eating.
Yeah.
John Roderick, send your potatoes to Billund, Denmark. So, you know, even if these, I feel like the problem with Turney's argument is that even if these things, first of all, we do not expect it to be profitable. I mean, what a straw man. Like, guess right. what? Most waste disposal systems in America are not profitable.
Right.
Like, we're not mad right. at the dump if it's not making a profit.
Also, my work around the house is not billed at $100 an hour.
Right. Second of all, even if these things are inefficient, you know, we want to have the processes in our pocket for a world where we can use less stuff, where there are scarcities of the, you know, even if right now aluminum is the only scarcity, that won't always be true.
Sure. It's like the Chinese building trains in Africa. Who knows?
Who knows what they're for?
That's right.
And finally, he's not 100%, like, he was mostly right about landfills. There was no landfill crisis in the late 80s. The garbage barge kind of tricked us.
We still have all of Nevada.
There's still so much room. This is not like in the top, if you were to ask an environmentalist, what are the 100 biggest concerns, you know, as a kid, I would have put, you know, choked landfills in my top five, and they're not going to be in her top 100. But there are problems in building landfills today. It's not as trivial as he makes it seem. There's tons of problem solving due to, I mean, often just NIMBY stuff like...
Where does it go?
Where does it go?
But also trucking, it's a source of a lot of pollution just to move that garbage around.
That's true. And incredibly expensive because of all, you know, the liners you've got to put in the dirt. You've got to be collecting all the leachate that we've talked about so it doesn't get into groundwater. You've got to have ongoing groundwater testing. So you've got to build in all these sensors so that the landfill will be environmentally benign for centuries. So it's not easy. Landfills are still an ongoing concern.
I'm 100% certain that there is a futureling listening to the program, probably more than one, who's going to reveal that they are a landfill design engineer, and our futurelings Facebook page is going to have a long thread where people chime in and go, I also am in landfill construction. And we're going to learn three times as much as we learned today.
It'll be great in the next addenda episode. Today, if this were to happen again to the Mobro 4000, it would have an immediate destination. Did you read the story last year about Norway fretting because it had run out of trash?
Whoa.
Norway, one of the a big source of power in Norway is whatever kind of clean trash incineration they have going on.
Yeah.
And they are just too efficient now, these Nordics. They are not, they're reducing and reusing and recycling so much that they don't have enough trash to incinerate to power the stuff they need.
Surely Belarus is producing an abundance of trash.
Somebody nearby. Norway needs trash.
But what about all this hullabaloo a couple of years ago where all the recycling we were sending to China, the Chinese were like, actually, that was all a sham and we don't want your trash anymore.
I think they did want it, but then a lot of the economies changed. They no longer had a shortfall of paper and plastics or whatever it was they were taking. I think they were taking a lot of our mixed paper maybe. And
it no longer was profitable.
Yeah, now they're self-sustaining. You know, they have other ways to get that. Maybe it's they're planting a lot of softwood trees, I think. So I think they've replaced some of those sources. And so now the economies of recycling don't necessarily work. But, you know, to John Turney's point, that doesn't mean it's bad just because...
Right, just because it's not...
Different segments of it are more efficient than others.
Yeah, you can always find a way to say a thing isn't profitable. But, you know, how do you put a price on the profit that you feel in your soul?
Yeah, the pleasure I feel when I separate trash, honestly. Like, that's...
And that's more than just that you feel virtuous. I mean, for me, one of my jobs around the house is to take our mountain of recycling and compress it down so that it fits into the recycling bin. And it usually takes me 2 hours to sit and dismantle all the cardboard boxes, crush the cans. It's like a meditative time every week that I would pay. I would absolutely pay.
I would pay the city of Islip, New York. I would pay John Turney. Give me your huddled garbage yearning to breathe free.
And that concludes The Garbage Barge, entry 515.LA0345, certificate number 26561, in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are archived at Omnibus Project. Our handles were at Ken Jennings, where he's busy owning the conserves.
I don't think that's a thing.
And at John Roderick, where I'm busy getting owned. So if you want to see both sides of Twitter, you can just go to our respective feeds.
We don't interact that much on social
media. You and
me? Yeah.
Well, no, because you're like playing to the cheap seats.
It's a different ecosystem.
Yeah.
I'm filling stadiums, John.
Yeah, that's right. But every once in a while, you know, you reply, I'll reply. I say sometimes get in there with a funny line. You retweeted or replied to something of mine yesterday.
Oh yeah, you have people impersonating you on the internet. Don't fall for any fake John Rodericks.
Well, surely you do too. Aren't there fake Ken accounts?
I don't know. Are there?
It's easy to do a fake John account because all you have to do is claim that you're all about one love, one vision. And
is Ringo Starr a fake John Roderick account?
Ja Rastafari. Yeah. So anyway, but I got a lot of replies from people that work at Facebook and Instagram and Twitter saying like, oh, Ledley, we'll try and help you out with that. You know, we're going to start an internal audit. I was like, yeah, that's fine.
Y'all, who are they?
Y'all go.
Are they angry ex-fans?
Go in peace. Who? I think the fake accounts Roderick's are just bots. They go find somebody with followers, and then they scrape a picture of them off of the internet, and they combine it with some nothing, and then they auto follow all of you, the people following you, and
it's somebody in Belarus. All the fake Rodericks are in Belarus.
Then they try and sell you watches. You can go to my Instagram where all the excitement happens. You can email us both at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Really, now you're emailing Ken's wife, Mindy, who is reading all of our mail because she's part of a...
Because she's nosy.
She's a nosy wife.
She's Jessica Fletcher. She wants to know what's going on in the village.
You can go to our fan groups on Facebook and Reddit and Discord and hang out with like-minded futurelings.
You and I do answer the mail, by the way.
We do. Like, we answer the mail.
Like Mindy fields people who want their Patreon prize or whatever.
Yeah, she sorts the mail, but we do reply to the mail.
We do.
The various groups, depending on the internal culture of the social media platform, may be more or less welcoming of divisive talk. If you want to say things about us that are less generous, perhaps go to Reddit, the worst of all places.
We don't shut down Threads on the Facebook if people are complaining about us, do we?
Yeah, but they don't really complain about us. The Threads get shut down on Facebook because people start fighting with each other. Yeah, fighting with each other about things.
The enemy's not in here. It's out there, folks.
You know, my show Friendly Fire, which has a similar listenership to Omnibus, or I think maybe even similar demographically, the social media presence for Omnibus fans is universally kind of positive and smart, thoughtful.
Not Friendly Fire?
Friendly Fire, those people are constantly arguing not only with each other, but like they pick sides of the hosts.
You should have called that show Circular Firing Squad.
Circular, that's right. Anyway, going on social media that surrounds Friendly Fire is really hit or miss. I don't come away from there feeling good most of the time.
It's an unfriendly fire.
Yeah. You can mail us things.
Hey, you should call the Facebook group Dumpster Fire.
Dumpster Fire. Garbage Barge. you can mail us things, and we get lots of wonderful mail from people at our P.O. Box. P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Your friend in the etchings entry recently, you mentioned a friend of yours, your friend Ben.
Ben.
Who is actually an etcher? What's the verb? He's an etch-a-sketch?
Ben is an artist, a multidisciplinary artist. He does art installations. He does, he and his group, Beres Sutton Color, have done... a lot of conceptual art, but they also, he's now a glass artist as well, working etching glass, but he's for the last several years done etching in the classic sense. And I bought an etching of his that I mentioned on our show.
But he listened to that show.
Turns out he's an Omnibus listener.
And he found that I did not have one. And look at this nice framed etching he sent me.
He gave you an etching that was personal to you, your own etching.
It says, "My ship is sailing," which I thought was maybe kind of a Northwest-y nautical reference. But did you read the note?
No, the note was for you.
It's the last words of Russian artist Alexander Rodchenko. On his deathbed, he said, "My ship is sailing." So this is an etching of Alexander Rodchenko's death.
Wow.
So I don't know.
Well.
I guess I should arrange to die in the bed I hang this above.
Think about that for a minute, why don't you?
So is this a death threat from your friend Ben?
You know, he tends to be a pretty peaceful soul, but...
It doesn't say your ship is sailing, I guess.
No, your ship is sailing. So make ready. Make ready, sailor.
This is delightful, Ben. I hope you're listening because... I really love this.
Yeah, it's always nice when a friend from the real world turns out to also be an Omnibus listener and futureling. So Ben's work can be found online. He is available wherever etchings are sold.
He actually sent me contact info. BenBeres.com.
B-E-R-E-S.
B-E-R-E-S.
And then if you'd like to support the show, If you can't afford to send us your own etchings to support the show, you can support the show in other ways, and one of the nicest ways is to support it with a financial contribution to our Patreon at patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived before it turned into your landfill-centric culture. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, however, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.